Yeah, so this morning I want to continue. It might be one of the last ones with the mind trainings. Many of you have been coming over these past months, know that that has been a focus of many of these talks. And actually, this year-long intensive that we've been doing on these 59 slogans or mind trainings is coming to an end. There's been, I think, 60 or 70 people involved all year with studying and practicing them. And they are quite wonderful. For those who are not familiar, the mind trainings in Tibetan, they're called Lojong, are really a jewel of Indian Buddhism that was the heart of where Buddhism developed out of. But these teachings came to Tibet. Actually, they were not preserved in India. There was a great Indian teacher who had migrated to Indonesia named Sri Lingpa, who had been was the holder of these practices. And there was an Indian master called Atisha who traveled all the way to Indonesia at the time because he had heard about them, these teachings that really showed very practical ways of developing to be a real compassionate human being, and most importantly, how to deal with adversity, and how, as we say, turn adversity into the path of awakening. So he went all the way to Indonesia. He stayed with Sri Lanka for 3 years, came back, and then because of causes and conditions, left India and migrated up to Tibet, where he passed on these teachings, and they have been preserved. So we are very fortunate that they were preserved and preserved for over 1,000 years in Tibet, and now have made their way into our culture. There are a few texts that I would say are worthy of studying and practicing for a lifetime. You know, that thing, if you ever get caught on a desert island, you may not have to, because you're probably not dealing with anybody, so you may not need these, but you may need the practices around diversity, so. But anyhow, this, this is clearly one of them, and there are many books and commentaries on them these days. And again, I think posted on our website, there are probably past talks, but also there are many available to you. I wanted to just review the one I did last time called Learn the Three Difficult Points. I think I worked on those a number of weeks ago. You know, it's a very interesting thing about transformation. And this is a difficulty I think our culture has, is that we somehow think that if we intellectually, conceptually get something, if we have a conceptual understanding of it, that it really matters. And I say that because it's funny. I got a little, I think this is the third or fourth time in the last 10 or 15 years. So it's like every 3 or 4 years I teach this text. And I heard a little grumbling like, oh, I've already done it twice with you, Fred, you know. And my response was, I thought, well, if you really can practice every one of those slogans perfectly, yeah, there is no reason for you to take it. But I think where that comes from, it's sort of like, it's sort of like if you were learning music, right? And you had kind of, you were practicing a piece, and you kind of, you knew the notes, right? You knew the notes. And so, you know the notes. It was sort of a multimedia kind of presentation. If you knew how to hit each note, you might go, oh, I know how to play that piece. Well, you might know the right notes, but the quality of the playing might be lacking. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you could hear somebody hit the right notes, But they, you know, the cadence, the rhythm, the quality, the beauty, you know, I mean, may be absent. And I think for many of us, we have to be careful that we don't say, well, I know that, I know this practice, I know this teaching, I know it, I know it. And we might even think, and I know how to do it. You see, that's the thing. I know how to hit C major. I know how to hit D minor. You know, I know how to hit these things. Yeah, but can you do it with any consistency? And can you turn your knowledge into actually making beautiful music? See, that's what realization is. We have to practice the teachings to make them real. So there's some degree of proficiency and mastery, no matter what it is. Right? And again, I think a fault of our current culture, which is, you know, we can go on about it, but it is this sense that somehow if I intellectually know something, I know it. Right? Or if I know the form of it, somehow I am able to, you know, that's all that matters. But what matters is, in the same way that if you're learning an instrument or something, you want to be able to make beautiful music, in the same way we want to become, this may sound a little grandiose, but we want to become beautiful people. You know, the teachings make us beautiful because they ennoble us with real qualities, the best qualities of what it means to be a human being. Right? And that, unfortunately, takes practice. How much practice? A lot of practice. Over and over and over again. Right? If any of you have ever developed a skill, musical skill, hobby, craft, you know, whatever kind of skill, you know you only get good at it by repetition. You know, you can have lots of inspiration and creativity, and you get, I'm looking at the cellist over here, right? You know, you can have all that stuff. You can have natural talent, you can have all, but if you don't really develop it, it won't really bring great benefit to you or others. So, you know, so these, just because we go, oh, so I'm going to repeat what I said 2 weeks ago, because there may be some people here who were heard who actually have not even thought about it in the 2 weeks, which is another kind of failure of our culture. We are so, you know, people say I'm busy, 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 but it's not just that we're busy, 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 our minds are busy, 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 right? So we may come here on a Sunday, we may listen to a talk, we may hear something and go, wow, that's, you know, we may be kind of enthused, or we may, right? And then we walk out that door and that's it. Just take a moment, for those of you who come regularly. Is that true? And then we wonder why the transformation doesn't occur. The healing doesn't occur. You know, again, you know, how many of us, we're going to walk out of here and we're going to get in our cars and we're going to look at our phones, right? We're going to look on our computer. We're going to, and we're gone, right? You know, we're gone. And because of the nature of our mind, our minds are not stable, permanent thing. They have thoughts coming and going all the time, right? You all experienced that this morning, all right? That's just the nature of this mind. So if we don't bring some order to it, right? If we don't bring some focus to it, if we don't bring some conscious intentionality to how we work with it, it will by itself just continue, right, to just go wherever it wants to go. And you know where it doesn't like to go? To Dharma, right? It doesn't like to go to Dharma. There are too many other more fun things, interesting things, right? Important things for us to focus on. Well, that may be true for some of us, but if our own healing and transformation and awakening is somewhat important to us, then we have to realize it deserves more than, you know, just a random moment of experience. So we have to be, you know, and again, with our culture and with media and with the endless stimulation, it's almost like our minds are so restless. Again, they will walk out this door and right away they will look for something to latch onto. Does everybody know what I mean? It is so ubiquitous. You know, you do anything these days, and whatever it is, you know, the Google, the YouTube, you know, it'll always what? As you're not even done, and it will tell you what else you might be interested in. You know, and over time, that is seeding our minds that it's always looking for the next thing. It's always open to, you know, and it has nothing to do with what we originally were looking for, does it? But it looks interesting. And so we don't realize we're creating a mind that is endlessly seeking. It's endlessly moving from one thing to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing, the next thing. And there's no awareness of what is important. Right? What is really important to me? What piece of information is really important to me? How much information do I need to understand something? Right? I mean, how much information do you need? How much news do you need to realize the world's a mess? I mean, how much do we need? What? Just a little bit. I mean, if we're intelligent, we get it. Yeah. The world, you know, self-interest, violence, injustice. I mean, yeah, this is the world. I get it. Now what? We keep getting stuck as opposed to moving toward, you know, all right, so what's there to be done? How do I want to change this world? How do I want to change myself? That's the focus. So 2 weeks ago I did, the slogan was learn the three difficult points. And for those who were here and those who were here and don't remember, they're very simple, but very powerful. First difficult point, to be aware that an afflictive mind state has arisen in me. Okay? Does that kind of ring a bell to anybody? Slowly, it comes back, yeah. You know, that's the first difficult point. Are we aware of our minds, and we're aware for each of us, what are those mind states? What are those emotions that are disturbing to us? Right? Disturb our equanimity, disturb our harmony, disturb our aspiration of how we want to be in the world, disturb our relationships. You know, what are they? Are we aware of them? Do we have a word for them? Do we, when they arise, do we know they're afflictive? Or do we just get lost in them as if they're real? So this is the first difficult point. And I think that talk is probably posted or something. Okay, so we don't need to belabor it. The second difficult point. We may recognize, but the second difficult point is to immediately do something. You know, if it's clear that these are not the kind of mind states, these are not the kind of emotional states, these are not whatever that I want to be cultivating because they're not healthy for me, they're not healthy for my relationships, they're not healthy for the world. Okay, so when I'm aware that they arise, do I have, quote unquote, a strategy? Do I do something? Do something different? And in Buddhism, you know, there are 200 different things you can do. Many, many different ways of handling afflictive mind states. The important thing is, the difficult thing is, do I remember that when they arise, I'm supposed to do something? So I don't keep cultivating, don't keep maintaining. That's the second difficult point to remember. Third difficult point to remember is to be continuous. Like you may remember right now, you may have done a good job, you caught it. You provided an antidote, or you did something different, or you did the opposite, or you let it go, or whatever you did. But what happens the next time it arises, and the next time it arises? Is your practice continuous? If it's not continuous, then transformation will not occur, or occur very, very slowly. Right? There has to be this continuous. So these are the three difficult points. And again, I guess I gave a longer talk on it, but I just wanted to say it. It's because, again, you know, it's like, oh, I get it, yeah. Oh, three difficult points, yeah. One, two, yeah, I get it, okay. Let's go on to the next slogan. Can you see our minds? You know, let's go on to the next slogan. That was, yeah, I know that one. But do we practice it? How many people can say since that talk 2 weeks ago that they have been consistently practicing the three difficult points? Interesting, isn't it? Unless you all have, but you're trying to do something. See, it's we have to own it. We have to own this. We have to own our own transformation, our own healing, our own awakening. We have to own it. Right? We can't turn it over to the teachers, to the Sangha, to the future. Right? We have to own it. It has to be meaningful to us. So the next slogan that I wanted to, and again, there are 59 in here. And for those of you who are new, I mean, they go everywhere. Don't expect thanks, don't be temperamental, don't be caught up in irritation, don't make a fuss, find freedom through both examination and investigation, train wholeheartedly, don't fluctuate, don't make mistakes, this time practice the important points, don't think about the affairs of others, give up hope for results, you know. I mean these are the latter ones, which are more guidelines. I mean, the earlier ones have to do with, this transformation of adverse situations into the path of awakening and the cultivation of the loving heart and compassion. This is primarily what it's about, but we need these other guidelines. So the next one I wanted to talk to you about was so for those of you who knew, these slogans, you know, they need some commentary because without them, we're not sure what they're talking about. So there's a lot of commentary that comes along with these in the traditional text. So this next one says, don't make mistakes. Is that clear? So as you can see, I mean, left our own devices, we could go in a million different directions with don't make mistakes. Okay? So traditionally, there are six mistakes that practitioners can make. And they're interesting. I'm not just sharing them with you, but I think they're interesting. But again, I invite you to read these slogans, and there's lots of commentaries, good commentaries out there. Some are traditional, but some are by modern teachers, too. So the first mistake is called mistaken patience. Okay. Now, it's an interesting one because patience is one of the things, you know, that's one of the things we're cultivating, right? To be more patient, to be more understanding, to be more accepting, right? So, and all of a sudden they go, oh, but there is mistake in patience. So what this is getting at is a very interesting thing. It's really about that we are so patient with things that basically do not produce lasting value, right? Right. So anybody ever go to school, right? Did you ever just endlessly sit through boring classes? What? Anybody ever sit through boring classes? Endlessly sit through teachers that just droned on and on, right? Right. And yet we did our best to cultivate what? Patience. Right? We went through it. We were patient, right? Because why? It was expected, and also we wanted the outcome. We wanted a degree, or we wanted, you know, so right? I mean, there was a, but we were very patient. Okay? Has anybody ever gotten up for work and not been happy about going to work? Has anybody ever had a job that they really don't like? Right? And yet we are infinitely patient, aren't we? Is that true? Oh, look how patient we are. I mean, there's so many things in this world that we are just learned to be so patient about, right? We're patient with people. We're patient with our relatives. We're patient with people. You know, we're patient with all kinds. We're patient with traffic. We're patient with, right? I mean, you know, we learn to be patient with call centers, you know, and just keep us on, you know what I mean? Don't get, you know, but we are, we cultivate patience, right? But the results of that patience is ultimately for a worldly end, right? It's not of any real significance. Is that true? Okay. Now, when it comes to Dharma, our practice, let's say we feel, we sit for 30 minutes and we feel uncomfortable in our body. How many of us go, I'm going to get up? You know, how many of us, you know, don't like our mind states? We're impatient with our mind states, right? We're impatient with our distracted mind. We don't have the patience to keep going back over and over again until we develop competency and ability, right? So, you know, it's so this slogan is about, this mistaken is that we are so patient with certain things that ultimately do not produce much result. And yet, in terms of our Dharma practice and the things that we have to go through on the path of transformation, we are so impatient. We want such quick results, right? Is that clear? So this is the first one, you know, mistaken patience. And then we'll talk about these afterwards. And you'll see, they're all kind of variations on a theme. The next one is called mistaken interests. Interests are what? The things that our mind is curious about. It's actually, I think I was referring to it a little minute ago, right? Many things in this world that we can be interested in, right? You just open your little computer or look on your phone and what? Anything you could possibly be interested in, right? You can just be curious about and follow, right? What did they do on Saturday Night Live? What was the skit last night, right? Anybody, you know? Good. Curious, interesting, right? What's the latest tweet from our president? We're curious about what? I mean, think of all the things you've been curious about, you've been interested in this week. Just close your eyes a second. Think of all the things you've roamed about this mind, all the things you've been curious, you've been interested in. A new recipe, a new way to cook tofu, you know. Right? I mean, so many things that we're interested in. In the mass culture, popular entertainment. I mean, it's this, you know, Facebook, social media, so many things to be interested in. Who posted a new picture? Who did a, you know, who posted a new this, right? Endlessly. See how, see all the things we're interested in, curious about. And yet, how much interest, curiosity do we have about things that really matter? Matter for ourselves, again, our own spiritual path, our own transformation, our own healing, or really matter for the world, and how I show up in the world. You know, is there a relationship between all the myriad things I'm interested in and actually how I actually live my life? Are they congruent? Or is the way I want to live my life and the things that matter to me essentially in my life, and so much of the way that I spend my time and the things that I'm curious in and roaming about? And again, you know, these teachings, like, you know, 1,500 years old. I mean, this is all pre-modern society. I mean, little did they know how far we could range in our curiosity, our interest in so many things. And yet, what does it all add up to? So, mistaken interests and inclination. The third one is mistaken enjoyments. Again, you can see they're all variations on a thing. This is a big one, right? We are a pleasure-oriented, enjoyment-oriented, fun-oriented culture, aren't we? What do we take joy in? Do we, you know, where, you know, there are many little things that can give us pleasure and enjoyment. They're sort of like the interest and the curiosity, right? We can keep our life filled with endless little pleasures, endless little enjoyments, can't we? Yeah, I mean, it's, again, we have a culture that is based on fulfilling that. It's based on fulfilling all our needs for momentary pleasure, momentary stimulation, right? Momentary enjoyment, fun. And again, it's not like anything's wrong with that. So please understand, it's not that anything's wrong with any of that. That's just part of life. But, you know, are there deeper things to enjoy in this life? Right? Is there a pleasure that comes from really helping another human being who is suffering? You know, is that pleasurable? Is that enjoyable? Cultivating within our own mind greater peace and equanimity. Is that pleasurable? Reading things that really have meaning and that touch us deeply, is that pleasurable? You know, so I think this is mistaken enjoyments. And again, this is not dogma. This is not, you know, saying, but it's saying, yeah, are we especially in our culture today, are we really looking at our life, our interests, with a kind of deeper sense of who we are and where we want to go in our life and what's really important? Mistaken compassion. Which is interesting. I think here the mistaken compassion really means, is our compassion very targeted? You know, I have a relative, an older relative, and every time I talk to this relative, they will tell me something about a friend of theirs and what they're going through, right? As if it is the only terrible thing happening in the world. Okay. And yet, there is nothing that these people are experiencing which millions and millions and millions of people are not experiencing. Right? So where is our compassion for all the suffering people? You see? you know, we can go, we hear somebody lost their job. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, that we can feel bad for them. But do we have any concern for all the people who are struggling, you know, who've lost their jobs? Do you see what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, we hear somebody just got a bad medical diagnosis, and that's good that we care, but if that is all that's consuming, that's the depth of our compassion. And we're not aware, oh, you know, millions, if not, you know, hundreds of millions, who knows, billions of people, yeah, are suffering physical problems, ailments, poverty. You know what I'm saying? It's sort of like, you know, how narrow are our concerns? I mean, many people only concerned about themselves. Right, so this mistaken compassion is again, it's just trying to open us up. Open us up. Then obviously, see, they're all interesting because they're all going, but hold on, aren't you supposed to be a compassionate person? Like, aren't you supposed to, you know, be a patient person? But it's kind of saying it can be mistaken. It can be skewed in one direction. This next one's really interesting. It says, it's sort of like, it's like mistaken care for others, which I think is very interesting, and I'm just amazed that it's so, you know, that it's so ancient. It says, it asks us the question, when I am supportive or positive to somebody about what's going on in their life, what am I really supporting? You know, am I really supporting, really trying to help them to end their suffering? Or am I just putting a Band-Aid? You see? Right? So, like there are many people, you know, who have, you know, problems with their bodies, right? And they are, oftentimes when you run into them, they'll tell you about the latest diet they're on. Did you know what I'm saying? And our first response was, well, that's wonderful, right? But yet, if you know this person, and I know some people like this, you know, this is the 300th diet they've been on. You see? So in the short run, isn't it good? But are they really getting at the problem? You see? Are they really getting, are we really helping them when we say good? You know, it's like what else is it? It's like exercise, right? Somebody's telling you, yep, I'm training for a marathon, or I'm training for a 5K or a 10K, right? And our first response would be what? Let's be honest. What? Great. But, you know, where's it coming from? Why are they doing it? Are they body obsessed? Right? See, are they body obsessed? Are they over-obsessed about how their body looks to others and they want a certain kind of body because that's the way the media is? You see what I'm saying? So, or is it because everybody else is doing it? You know? Or is it to build themselves up? Look, you know? You know? And again, you see, it's kind of interesting, right? Because I think our natural response when somebody's telling us they're doing something that appears good is to say what? Great. You know, I mean, I understand it. I do it too. That's our first response. But I think what they're asking is, well, what am I really supporting in this person? You know, if you know somebody who's got a, you know, has a problem with alcohol, you know, do you get them wine for Christmas? It's what they'd like, isn't it? Yeah, it's what they like. They'll be very happy with that present. But what are you supporting in their life? Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, it makes us really think about, you know, how do you really help people? You know, what are they really suffering from? Right? You see, a lot of times you'll talk to people and they'll go on and on about their problems, right? And we're very, you know, probably a lot of people in here, we're compassionate people, aren't we? Is that true? And we're good listeners, aren't we? True? Yeah. And so we just listen. But what are we supporting in them? Are we nurturing their anger? Are we nurturing their unwillingness to let go of a situation, you know, that this is the 20th time they've gone on about? Are we nurturing their one-sidedness that refuses to see that they may have something to do with whatever it is, or they may have issues? Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, no, I understand there's a lot of skill. We just jump in. But it's a very, it's very powerful. It makes us stop and think, you know, what, you know, when I'm supportive of people, what am I really supporting? You know, again, I think we have a knee-jerk response, which is just, well, that's great, because outwardly it sounds great. But we may not be really helping them. And if we care about people who are suffering or going through difficulty, we want to help them. Isn't that true? We really want to help them if we can. Yeah, and especially this deep listening stuff. I mean, again, I'm all in favor of deep listening when it's a positive thing. But sometimes when you deep listen to the same stuff for the 20th time, your deep listening is only continuing the person's suffering. You know, let's talk about something else. Tell me something positive that's going on in your life, right? Anything happy happened this week? Let's talk a little. It's like, let's change the conversation. I mean, almost immediately, let's change, especially if you know the person, right? I mean, there are people, you know, there are a lot of people of all ages that every time you talk to them, they only talk about what? What's wrong? What's wrong with them? What's wrong with their spouse? What's wrong with their job? What's wrong with the world? Did you know these people? Right? And as they talk, what are they cultivating within themselves? More negativity. Right? Right? And by our listening to them, oh yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Oh, it's terrible. What are we nurturing in them? What more negativity? What would be really helpful to them? What? Change the subject, change, help them change their mind. You know, because they're cultivating an afflictive mind, aren't they? And again, I understand that we're nice people, right? And I mean, I understand the natural. And it's you know, we feel reluctant, don't we? We're not comfortable with just, you know, why don't we talk about something? You know, Buddhist psychology is based on the cultivation of wholesome mind states and the transformation of negative mind states in a very simplistic way. That's what it's based on. The idea that somehow by ruminating and going over and over or working through afflictive mind states is somehow going to produce a positive result all by itself is untrue. It's even like this. You know, the first one I just did, which is said, you know, remember that? For those of you who remember, the three difficult points. See, Christina's taking notes, so she knows what they are. Yeah. So that's great. You know, be mindful, be aware when an afflictive mind state arises, and immediately do something so it doesn't continue to do that continually. That's great. In terms of diminishing the afflictive mind. But that doesn't necessarily produce the wholesome mind, the happy mind, the carefree mind, does it? That has to be cultivated. It's not going to happen by itself. So, you know, we talk about how to skillfully handle and heal and transform the afflicted, but that's like 20% of 25%. The other 75-80% should be on cultivating the wholesome mind, right? And the truth is, when 80% of your mind is wholesome, it by itself will transform the unwholesome, many of it. You know, Buddhist psychology is based on the interaction of mind states and the perfuming of mind states. And the same way, you know, perfume, somebody who's wearing a strong perfume or cologne or whatever, right? They may just put it on themselves, but what? Gets into the clothes, gets into your clothes, right? Yeah, it perfumes, you know. Somebody just gave us a aromatic candle, you know, for Christmas. You know? Strong. Wow, you know, it's like the whole room is like saturated. You know, there's no subtlety there. But that's like mind states. Yeah, you know, you cultivate an anger here, and all of a sudden you're angry over there, you're irritated about this one, you remember that one, you're worried about this, and then you're worried about that. You see, they perfume each other. And we wonder why we kind of have this negative framework of mind. Well, it's because we are cultivating and we're not cultivating. So if we really want to transform the way we experience our mind, you know, if we really want a mind that feels good, that feels wholesome, that feels at ease, that is the repository of lots of good things, and not the opposite, we have to cultivate that, right? And if at this point our mind is not like that, there's only one reason. And that is, again, not like we've knowingly did that, because I don't think anybody would want to be miserable knowingly. But because we don't know. We don't understand that we are creating our minds. Right? How do we create our minds and the way our minds feel? By our thoughts, by our feelings, by our words, by our deeds. We are cultivating a certain kind of mind state. It's not anybody else that's doing it to us. I mean, it'd be nice to blame people, wouldn't it? Yeah, it'd be nice to hold the external world responsible for our mind states. Actually, there's a slogan here that says, you know, don't be affected by external things. Great slogan, you know. There's another slogan that says, you know, whichever of the two, which is like positive or negative, occur, always remain the same. Equanimity. Again, is it easy for me to say these words? Yeah, these are easier. Is it easy to practice them? No. Right? It takes practice. The last one is mistaken joy. And it's sort of, I think you kind of get it. It means, you know, you know, we take joy in the wrong things, or the things that aren't ultimately meaningful, right? You know, we want to really be clear what, you know, like if our team wins, how do we feel? Happy. Right? But you know, every time our team wins, another team is losing. Right? Every time we win, how do we feel? What? Happy. And if we really beat them really soundly, we're joyous. Mistaken joy. Doesn't mean, you know, that's not part of life. But you know, it's like, you know, you know, what should we really be feeling joyful about? Maybe we should be feeling joyful about for the person who never wins, who just won, even if they beat us. It's a very different way of looking at things. In Buddhism, we take that taking joy in the joy of others. It's a different kind of joy. Yeah, so let's So again, these slogans are just here to help us be free. So the first one, learn the three difficult points. Second, don't make mistakes, mistaken patience, mistaken interest, mistaken enjoyments, mistaken compassion, mistaken care for others, mistaken joy. Think about that in your own life. Just close your eyes. Learn the three difficult points. To be aware when an afflictive mind state arises. To immediately do something. And to then do it consistently. Do I practice that? Do I know how to practice that? Do I want to practice that? Ask yourself. These are good questions to ask ourselves. Am I really clear within my mind? What is an afflictive mind state for me? What are the mind states that cause me affliction, cause me to suffer, throw me off my game, sabotage how I want to show up in the world? Do I know what these mind states are? In other words, do I have the right label for them? Secondly, do I have a strategy if I don't want to continue to cultivate them, that when they arise, this is what I do? You know, not an hour later when I've given myself a good opportunity to wallow. Right? You all know what I'm talking about? How we wallow in these mind states. Hours, days, some of us wallow in them for decades. If I know they're afflictive, not helpful to me, sabotage my aspiration, do I have a strategy of what I'm going to do when they arise? It's very clear to me. And then third, which is a little down the line, is if I have the first two, then I mean, do I have the wherewithal to, you know, be continuous? So I can really get to the other side of this. It's an introspective moment on these three difficult points. Then in the slogan about don't make mistakes. Just be aware, like for mistaken patience. All the things in your life that you've been patient with. And how often impatient we are with the obstacles or challenges that may arise, you know, in our spiritual life and learning how to meditate and learning how to train our mind. Are we as patient? With our own challenges in our healing life, transformative life, spiritual life, as we are with so many worldly things. mistaken interests. How many of the things that I'm interested and curious about, just on a daily, real-time basis, are really not what I'm, when I step back, what I'm really most interested in this life? Do I have mistaken interests? All of us have limited time. Limited time on this earth, in this life. Limited time on a daily basis. Mistaken enjoyments, mistaken compassion, we've talked about. Mistaken care, support for others. It's some of what I do mistaken. Mistaken again, like they're bad. It's just they're a mistake in terms of, you know, it's like if you look at a piano again, I mean, every note is a note. From the point of view of the piano, every note is a note, right? There's no bad or good, right or wrong. But if you're playing a certain piece, then there is a right note and a wrong note. Is that clear? So it's the mistakenness of these things is only in terms of, you know, the notes we want to be hitting in our life. That's why certain notes become mistaken. It's not like they're intrinsically mistaken. Is that clear? It's only in relationship to the whole of our life. And what we're doing now, where we're stepping back from our life and learning a little bit of teaching and applying it to our life, is what is helpful to us. Many of us, I don't know how often people in this room have time in their life, right? Their busy lives, our busy lives, to just step back and stop and ask ourselves these kinds of reflective questions. It's very important, very easy to get off the path, whatever your path is. So good. Questions, comments? Anything not clear? Any about how to apply this? Anything? Don't be shy or challenging or. Yes.
So is it mistaken patience to be patient with a suffering self?
Is it mistaken patience to be patient with the suffering self? You mean like your own self? Oh. Well, again, the suffering self is a very big word, right? It sort of looks like it's a real thing, but there's no such thing as a suffering self, right? We have to be very careful how we frame our experience. But there are suffering moments. There are moments of suffering. There are mind states of suffering. There are thoughts that contribute to our suffering. Right? Yeah, we should not be patient with those. Right? Why shouldn't we be patient with them? I mean, again, but I'm not saying, you know, we should be railing against them. That's just creating another negative mind state. But yeah, I mean, in Shantideva, he says a wonderful thing. He says, you know, he calls them, you know, he says, you know, in our mind, we have enemies. Remember, it's a very wonderful thing. He goes, we have enemies. I mean, what is an enemy? An enemy is someone who what? Who wants to do you harm, right? That's an enemy. Well, we have mind states that want to do us harm. I mean, everybody know what I'm talking about. This is not, we all know this. But do we see them as, you know, enemies? And again, it doesn't mean you have to hate them. I mean, they're not, you know, even to hate them is to give them more power than they are. But their mind states, their ways of thinking that hurt us, that rob us of our capacity to be happy, to be noble human beings. I mean, that's right. Yeah, and we should not be patient with them. But again, it doesn't mean we just go around. I mean, that's just another negative mindset. It means, yeah, I'm not tolerant of them. I mean, I'm tolerant in the big picture. You know, I understand they arise, but in the moment when they arise, as we said in the difficult points, I do something. I mean, that's the focus. It's not like, you know, just getting so angry because your anger is arising. Right. So, you know, I mean, people have critical, they say, I really want to get rid of my critical mind. And then they get critical about themselves for having a critical mind. Well, that's the critical mind. You know? When the critical mind arises, see it, name it, and do what? Well, let it go and you know, have a positive thought, you know. Right? I just had a critical thought about Rich and I catch it and I go, what are those good qualities in Rich? You see? Turn it around. Right? I mean, it doesn't take much time, but it changes the mind. Right? I mean, is that, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, yeah. I mean, again, the idea of enemy, you know, again, it sounds very pejorative, but an enemy is someone who wants to do us harm. And we have to understand that there are mind states like that that just do us harm. Again, everybody know what we're talking about. We all have. And it changes, you know. I mean, there are different stages of our life, different times of our life, different aspirations. You know, there are things that become our enemies. But again, you know, we don't have to hate them. We don't have to struggle with them. We have to just see them. Oh. You know, we can see a rattlesnake. We can know it's, if I pick it up or get too close to it, it's going to do me harm. I don't have to kill it, do I? No. Well, I just have to walk around, walk in the other direction. You know, because I see it, you know, it can do me harm. Yes. Just wait a second.
As I was listening to the notion of gently guiding the conversation in another direction, mm-hmm. or say, can we talk about something else? What came up for me was,
you mean when you're talking to a person,
to somebody who's doing the same, you know, over and over, kind of rut stories instead of river stories. It came to me that before I could do that, I'd have to face what you're now calling an enemy, because it's fear that stops me from doing that, because on the other side, they're going to say, well, you're not listening to me. And I'm pretty aware that I don't have patience in listening. I think I endure, all right? And
endure?
I endure the Sturm und Drang.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's not patience.
Right, it's not even patience yet.
Patience is understanding.
Right,
yeah.
So it seems to me that before I say to this whomever, how was your day otherwise, or whatever, my fear is stopping me. Forget what follows after that. So it seems to me one has to step back, and think about that enemy, if you will.
Well, and again, you know, skillfulness is important. Knowing your person is important. Right, so you know, it's not like we're just bulls in a china shop, you know. Just right, I understand. So there's got to be some level of sophistication, but I think what you said is very important. where am I coming from? You see, in the Bodhisattva way, where we're coming from is I want to be of benefit. I want to support the good in life, right? So I'm not changing the subject like if it was about me, because I can't take it anymore. If I got to listen to this person go on one more minute, you know what I'm saying? You see, I got to, you know, you see, that's about me. And that's the wrong place to come from, right? It's got to be about this person's suffering, because sometimes we do listen to people go on and on, don't we? Because it's, we think, you know, it's the first time, or it's the second time, or we know that, you know what I'm saying? We know they're going, and they just, so I'm not saying we're never good listeners, but we're talking about, you know what I'm talking about. And we do the same thing with ourselves. I mean, we endure our own whining, complaining, going over negative, right? I mean, we got to get, I mean, you know, begins here. So I agree with you. You know, we have to be comfortable. But I think it's much more comfortable when we realize I'm coming from the highest good. I really want to help this person. This is not good for them. But then, you know, the skill is, you know, how to do it. But you're right. I mean, if you're scared that somebody's going to be upset with you, they may be upset with you. But, you know, I mean, you know, right? I mean, so, you know, an alcoholic tells you, you know, they're out of booze. Would you run down to, you know, to the liquor store and get them a fifth? When you say no to them, they might be what? Unhappy. I understand that. But I mean, you have to think, you're not doing it to be cruel to them. You're doing it because you want to help them and you don't want to enable them. They may not get that. So we have to be, you know, again, that's sort of extreme, because I think one can be sophisticated and kind of changing the direction of the conversation, you know, asking another question, bringing something positive up, right? I'm thinking of some relatives, you know, well, tell me about your grandchildren. What's new with them? Because what do old people like to talk about? What? Anybody been around old people? Some of us may be in the room. I mean, especially, what's a major concern in their life? What? No, in a negative way. Health. And they will go on and on and on about, right? Now, again, it's not like we shut them down, but after a while we realize, yeah, I get it. You know, so tell me something positive, right? You see what I'm saying? It's good for them. Because when they're going over the negative, they're just watering negative seeds within themselves. So I want to help them. So I want to help them water positive seeds within themselves.